This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was the chief executive officer of the Chicago Public Schools, Forrest Claypool. And Forrest Claypool came out swinging after talking about the increased graduation rate for Chicago Public School students, which he said was a triple improvement over the last 5 years, and that 73% of their students graduate, and this will be 80-some percent in about a year or two, and that eighth graders have led the United States in math gains, and fourth graders placed third in reading gains in urban systems across the United States. He said this is simply amazing, since Illinois is dead last in funding education. Illinois gains are because of the Chicago public school system. However, he talked about unequal funding of education between haves and have-nots that must stop. In fact, he said, the state is engaged in overt discrimination against African-American and Latin students in the city of Chicago. The future of hundreds of thousands of students are at stake unless we receive equitable funding from the state legislature. Many times, he said, the school system is under siege, and he doesn't expect anything to happen in the next 35 hours in Springfield to solve this problem. He said point blank, Republicans are lying when they say that Chicago gets more than its equitable share. He says Chicago students receive only 74 cents of every dollar, while outlying districts and white districts primarily receive $1 for each dollar that is allocated. All suffer, he says, but Chicago suffers from a separate set of rules that have brought CPS to the verge of insolvency. He expects the schools to open in September, and he expects to work cooperatively with the Chicago Teachers Union. But most of all, he said, the hope in the classrooms are with the hardworking teachers, the principals, parents who get involved, and concerned students. The governor must respond to the needs of Chicago's school system.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Mayor?
I would like to add my voice to the fact of Monsignor Velo's incredible invocation. And given his Hebrew prayers, I have an opening at a Reform synagogue for him. And those of us who go Orthodox will not be attending that synagogue, but I think there's a lot of openings for you there, Monsignor. Thank you. Second is, before I get started, while it is noted about the Special Olympics and we're coming up to a big anniversary, but on the heels of Memorial Day, the city of Chicago will be the first city ever to also host the Warrior Games. And it will include veterans from both the United States, the UK, and Australia. They start June 30th, go to July 8th here in the city of Chicago. They've never been held in a city. They're always on our Army base or a base of the armed forces. The Navy is hosting them this year, and we are the proud city to host for the first ever Warrior Games. So in case, yes. The men and women also gave their fullest for the country at that point. You know, it's my Jay noted. I introduce my members of my administration and cabinet who will come and present always to the city of Chicago and the people of the city of Chicago their record. Nothing's made me prouder than to introduce my good friend Forrest Claypool, who at every level has always left an incredible, indelible mark on the departments he has run, where the people and the people that use the system are better served, and also the system itself or the department itself is on firmer, stronger financial footing. That's whether that's at the Park District or at CTA. And I specifically also want to highlight CTA, because you can see its financial position is stronger. Its service as somebody who uses the CTA, as I did this morning, is stronger, and it draws a direct contrast here in Chicago how the CTA is running versus what's going on in New York right now, as you see the fights that are going on and also the dysfunction and the breakdown in that system. Record investment in capital and stronger financial position in that system, and Dorval's continuing that great work. Wherever Forrest has gone, wherever he has been a leader in whether it's a Park District or the CTA, and also in my own office, that department is stronger and on firmer ground, both in the sense of what its mission to serve the public, as well as on stronger ground financially. Normally, if a system was having a graduation rate that was three times the national average every year for the last 5 years, a city would be celebrating that point. And we should celebrate the point that the Chicago Public Schools today, every year for the last 5 years, the graduation rate is triple the national average. When I became mayor, it was at 57. In the next 2 years, it will hit 87%. Our eighth graders led the country in math gains of all urban systems. Our fourth graders, placed third in gains in reading of urban systems. We now are on par with kids going to college and community college with the national norm, even while 84 to 85% of our kids are on free or reduced lunch, and that's not true nationwide. Those are incredible academic accomplishments that academic experts in the field of public education are all studying what's going on in Chicago. And that's in the face not only of certain demographics, but in the face that in the face of the fact that the state of Illinois is dead last in funding education of any state of the 50 states. Dead last. And has a funding formula that is fundamentally broken so that the kids of Woodlawn are not treated equally like the kids of Winnetka. The kids of Bronzeville are not treated equally like the kids of Burr Ridge. And the kids of Englewood are not treated the same as the kids of Evanston. And that has to stop. 120 days ago, the Governor's Commission issued a report on fixing the funding formula. Yet there's never been introduction of legislation. They're working on that in Springfield at this point in the House and Senate. Today marks the 700th day we've gone without a budget or a budget being introduced. 700 days. It is time, as Forrest has led the effort, that the state of Illinois finally fix the funding formula of education and finally fix the fact and treat the children of the city of Chicago as equal residents of the state of Illinois like all the other children across the state of Illinois. The discussion by the CEO of the public school system should be about the education of the children of the city of Chicago. And we as a city, and I'm one other fact, all the gains, the data I just gave you, if you took Chicago out of the state of Illinois, their graduation rate, their test scores will either have been flat or declined. The entire gains for the state of Illinois over the last couple of years on graduation and reading and math gains are on the backs of the children of the city of Chicago and the teachers in the city of Chicago. Illinois' gains are being achieved by the children of the city of Chicago. And the state of Illinois, in the times in which we're having a discussion, should be about all the strengths in the system educationally rather than about the weakness in the funding. I cannot be prouder of not only introducing a friend, but somebody who is with his leadership, with both Frank Clark as chair and Janice Jackson as head of education, somebody who has taken this argument and made the point that with 120 days, with no leadership in fixing a funding formula, it's time we fix the funding formula and back up these educational gains, because anybody that sees the challenges we have and the opportunities, you double down on the strengths of a system, and that's what's happening in the schools across the city of Chicago. Forrest is an incredible leader at their time to take, and not only, in my view, stabilize the finances of CPS, but do it in a way that allows the gains that we've been seeing educationally continue to be building and building successfully, because the kids of the city of Chicago do not have a do-over when it comes to education. Kids start dropping out of college in third grade. And it's incumbent upon us, if our children are going to live up to their full potential, we have to live up to our full responsibility. And it's time the state of Illinois did that. The person to lead us in this effort, Forrest Claypool.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you all for coming here today. Did want to acknowledge a couple of people. My partner, Janice Jackson, Chief Education Officer, has been a tremendous, just an incredible job in keeping these academic gains going forward, even in a time of difficulty. Frank Clark, my board chairman. Frank is as good a man and as strong a leader as anyone could ever hope to work under, and I'm very blessed to have him at the helm of CPS. I would also like to acknowledge a group of religious and community leaders who have been in the vanguard of the fight for racial justice and equal funding for CPS students. Dr. Byron Brazier, Bishop Simon Gordon, Bishop Wayne Miller, Dr. Leon Finney, Pastors Lou Ramos and Leon Miller, the irrepressible Billy Dyson with the Secretary of State White's office, Juan Soto, CEO of Pilsen Neighbors, and Barbara Abrajano, liaison to the Council of Religious Leaders. Those of you who are here, thank you so much for coming. Very grateful to you. In 2006, there was a documentary called An Inconvenient Truth, and it was about the dangers of climate change, and it was based on the work of former Vice President Al Gore. The underlying data showed that, like the proverbial frog in the slowly heating pot that realizes too late that it's being boiled to death, that our planet is slowly heating. The documentary argues that our failure to understand this inconvenient truth and confront it for what it means will lead to catastrophic consequences. And so today, with apologies to Al Gore, I want to share another inconvenient truth, that the state of Illinois is engaged in overt racial discrimination against African-American and Latino schoolchildren in Chicago. And if it is not understood for what it is, and if it is not confronted for what it means, it too will have catastrophic consequences for CPS, for Chicago neighborhoods, for Chicago's economy, and most importantly, for the futures of hundreds of thousands of school children. The facts are not in doubt. We have 20% of the students in the state. We receive only 15% of state education funding. Our children are 90% of color. The rest of the state is predominantly white. The difference between our enrollment and what the state gives CPS is $500 million a year and growing. The difference between a school system under siege and one that can offer fiscal stability and effective classroom resources. There is no way to sugarcoat this. As the lawyers representing CPS and five parent plaintiffs in the ongoing civil rights lawsuit against Governor Rauner in the state of Illinois have written, although the state has not installed signs on schoolhouse doors that say whites only and colored, the state has used its checkbook to accomplish exactly that. This institutionalized discrimination is taking place in the state of Lincoln and Obama, a state that prides itself on progressive political views. No one person, no one party, no evil set of characters went into a back room and devised this racially discriminatory system. It has evolved through accidents of history, changing demographics, state fiscal pressures, and weak political wills. But hurtful actions, hurtful recent actions by the governor have exacerbated this underlying injustice. One reason there hasn't been broader recognition of this blatant unfairness is the way the story has been covered or not covered. We live in an instant media age. And in this era of shrinking news budgets and increasing demand for content, the appetite for conflict is often greater than the commitment to dig deeply into the substance of these issues. Coverage too often becomes a catalog of he said, she said, claims and insults, rather than a thoughtful exploration of where the truth actually lies. But the real story is evident from the state's own public data and a little third grade math. When all sources of education funding are accounted for, general state aid, block grants, pension subsidies, everything, the state provided a CPS child with 74 cents for every dollar it spent on a child in the predominantly white remainder of the state in 2016. Perhaps because it is so simple to verify, the state did not bother to contest these facts in court. Within 4 to 5 years, that number will be 65 cents on the dollar, and so on and so on. The gap between white Illinois and black and brown Chicago growing exponentially larger, making the great state of Illinois more akin to Jim Crow Mississippi than to a modern land of Lincoln. And by the way, our request for equal funding, what we like to call 20% for 20%, is not asking for a bailout. It's not a bailout to receive simply what all other school districts in the state of Illinois receive. Governor Rauner and his spokesperson aggressively spread the lie that CPS receives more money than other districts, that we receive special treatment, as well as other lies with thinly veiled racial overtones, like calling Chicago schools crumbling prisons. Last election, they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars putting a dilapidated, frightening-looking school building on TV ads in state legislative races and screaming about a bailout for Chicago. For the record, that wasn't even a Chicago school in the picture. Now, obscuring the truth even further are the strategic missives from our local teacher union leadership, who cast blame on the district and absolved the state of responsibility for this discriminatory funding, saying in their words that it's unfair and not right to blame Springfield. Any individual or organization that purports to speak for teachers, children, or social justice should be leading the charge against this injustice. It's disappointing to me, even bewildering, that the CTU leadership chooses to look the other way. They should be the first to acknowledge that this slighting of our children and teachers is fundamentally wrong. CTU should be locking arms with us in Springfield, not simply demanding that Chicago taxpayers make up even more of the difference for the state's destructive dereliction. The state has failed to fund education properly for decades. Illinois is last in the nation, as the mayor indicated, and the percentage of funding it provides to local schools, about 26%. It is last in the nation in reflecting the higher cost of educating children in poverty. Mm-hmm. That jacks up property taxes and ensures that those districts without valuable tax bases will not be able to provide a quality education for their children, which is why I joined dozens of downstate superintendents last year in Vandalia, the old state capital, where Lincoln served, and where I recently joined those same superintendents in Springfield to protest this regressive funding formula. CPS students like those in Peoria and Danville and Aurora and Taylorville have suffered from the failures of the state's funding formula. But Chicago students are hit with an even bigger double whammy. Not just a regressive funding formula, but a separate set of state rules that have brought the district to the brink of insolvency. It is a relatively new phenomenon, unlike the long-standing history of the state funding formula. This one is just 7 years in the making, the result of skyrocketing teacher pension obligations that by law only CPS has to make, with the state picking up the tab for every other school district. Until 7 years ago, the state created a rough equilibrium, either by fully funding both state pension systems, which they did for many, many, many years, or by granting temporary relief to Chicago. But then it stopped doing both. It has funded downstate and suburban teachers since 100%. While essentially zeroing out its historic funding for Chicago. The General Assembly finally recognized this unequal treatment last year and took a small step forward towards recognizing funding equality, providing CPS with $215 million in pension subsidies. This did not make CPS whole, but it was a step in the right direction. However, Governor Rauner vetoed even this small concession to fairness. Regardless of his motivations, the fact is that the governor continues to fully fund white districts, providing their pension subsidies and general state aid on time, while vetoing pension funding for black and brown CPS and delaying our block grant payments, hundreds of millions of dollars of block grant payments. The math from this racially discriminatory system is absolutely unsustainable. No amount of budget cuts, no amount of management efficiencies, no amount of tax hikes can make up the difference for long. Like the iconic Pac-Man arcade creature, the pensions mandate will rapidly eat up every dollar in its path, in all likelihood costing the district hundreds of millions of dollars more in just the next few years. This racially discriminatory state funding is a cancer on CPS. In the past 2 years, our cuts, management reforms, and enhanced revenues have been mere radiation treatments, slowing down and postponing the cancer's advance. But no homegrown remedies will ultimately stop its deadly reach. Only the removal of the cancer, either by Springfield or by the courts, will cure the patient. Our predecessors tried to keep up with the hundreds of millions of dollars in new pension mandates by borrowing, by draining down all the district's cash reserves, and then by borrowing until they could borrow no more. This despite raising property taxes to the legal limit every year. But borrowing only puts our taxpayers on the hook while letting Springfield off the hook. And for all practical purposes, borrowing as a means of coping is over. Despite all our efforts to minimize pain in the classroom, these budget cuts are closing in on the classroom. And as always, it's the kids who lose out, not the adults who create the system. And in our case, that's low-income children, black and Hispanic children, whose only path out of poverty is a good education. I've been in government politics a long time. I've worked with unions, with business leaders, Republicans, Democrats, not-for-profits, and my record is clear. You know, I've privatized some services, and I've deprivatized others. I've cut spending where it made sense, and I've raised spending where it made sense. I've cut taxes, and I've raised taxes. I've worked with unions, and I've never triggered a strike or even required a mandatory arbitration, something, by the way, that had never been done in two generations at the CTA. But every job I've had at the Park District, City Hall, CTA, the county, my only goal has been to boost the quality of the service at a fair cost to the taxpayers. Less than 2 years ago, Mayor Emanuel appointed Frank Clark and I to lead CPS, joined by new board members. Together, we've significantly reduced inefficiencies and administrative costs, even while continuing academic progress. Modern management practices and financial controls are now in place, reducing costs and capturing new revenues, and administrative positions have been reduced by 30% to just 3% of the workforce. And until Governor Rauner's mid-year veto of the $215 million in pension funding, we had a balanced budget, a budget that had erased a starting deficit of $1.1 billion. But the stress and disruption caused by the governor's mid-year veto, timed to do the maximum damage to our schools, combined with the district's junk credit rating and the weak cash position, has harmed our schools and caused teachers, parents, and principals to question whether CPS can ever right its fiscal ship. We can, and we are, but all our efforts will be in vain if the state is allowed to continue to discriminate on the basis of race in handing out education funding. Whether our victory comes in the courts or in the political arena, it must come. It must come. If we are to protect what we most cherish, the quality of the futures of our children and everything that means for this great city that we love. This financial injustice is sad for many, many reasons, but particularly because it comes at a time of remarkable academic progress for CPS kids, as the mayor alluded to. Our graduation rate has steadily climbed from about 50% when mayoral control began to 73.5 today, including a huge spike in the last 5 years. And within a few years, we are on track to reach the national average. Under Mayor Emanuel, the dropout rate has also fallen by half, and the district has set record ACT scores. The rate of freshmen on track to graduate is 20 points higher than it was just 5 years ago. And here's another interesting thing. A report came out last month showing that despite all our financial problems, we have 1,400 arts teachers in the school system, which is up by several hundred in the last few years, the result of Mayor Emanuel's 2012 arts education plan. This is what parents want. They want a well-rounded education for kids who are engaged and want and eager to come to school. And there's more. A Stanford University professor named Sean Reardon looked at test scores across the country between 2009 and 2013. It turns out that despite a student population that is overwhelmingly low income, we got the highest rate of improvement of any big district in America except Washington, D.C., and we're five times bigger than D.C. Let me say that again. Chicago has been improving faster than any city in the United States except Washington, D.C. And according to Stanford professor Reardon, the kids in Chicago get more than 5 years of learning growth in 4 years between grades 4 and 8. And his results are not based on the Illinois test. They are also based on a national test. This is a great story, right? How come we're not talking about it? How come we spend all our time talking about Springfield and funding and politics? These remarkable academic gains started under Mayor Daley, and they have accelerated under Mayor Emanuel. When it comes to why, the question of why is Chicago doing so well, there's a theory going around, and it showed up in the New York Times, of all places, a few months ago. The theory is that over the last decade, Chicago has invested heavily in principal development, and we have done a lot to empower principals, to reduce bureaucracy, and to give schools more autonomy in exchange for accountability. If you think about it, that makes a lot of sense. Great principals lead great schools. They hire great teachers. They weed out bad teachers. They lead. And the investment in our principals and the growth of high-quality teaching has been a tremendous success, something to be very proud of. Wouldn't it be nice if we all joined hands, teachers, principals, parents, unions, businesses, elected officials, and celebrated this remarkable accomplishment? Certainly, the generous taxpayers and parents of Chicago deserve some good news. Today, 42% of our graduates enroll in four-year colleges, just below the national average of 44%. They've earned $1.1 billion in college scholarships, a new record. And as we know, under Mayor Emanuel, the school day and school year have lengthened. Access has been increased to full-day kindergarten and preschool. We led the nation in making computer science a core high school requirement and expanded international baccalaureate programs and STEM programs, which stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. I could go on listing these accomplishments and stories of triumph, stories of hope, of smart, dedicated teachers, and inspired and engaging students. But I'm still hung up on this inconvenient truth. I'm still troubled that a district that is overwhelmingly black and Hispanic is systematically underfunded by the state, uniquely underfunded by the state, even as that same state government fully funds white districts. And I'm deeply troubled that so little attention and so little moral outrage has been directed at this injustice. I worry about what this will all mean, not in the distant future, but now. To all the remarkable academic progress of our children, to the district's ability to attract and retain the same top principals and teachers who have driven these accomplishments, and the middle-class families who help anchor so many neighborhoods, to the safety and economic vitality of the city, which depends on a strong school system, and to the students whose very futures will depend increasingly on access to equal funding, not more funding, equal funding. Under Illinois law, the governor and the legislature have another 35 hours to pass a budget and another 35 hours to address massive inequities in education funding. They have failed 2 years in a row, so I'm not holding my breath. I want to say that we're grateful to our Chicago legislators for their support of CPS. And in the coming hours and potentially weeks ahead, we need them to do more. We need them to bring a sense of urgency to this fight. and ensure that another school year does not pass without equal funding for Chicago children. This time of year, our principals should be recruiting. They should be recruiting top talent, planning for the next school year. Instead, they're thinking about where they can cut. It's absolutely disgraceful. Year after year, our politicians fail to address the twin evils of education funding driven by class and education funding driven by race. Year after year, our politicians do the same thing, ignoring the obvious, ignoring what is right. The only place to find hope in this political fiasco is in our classrooms, where the real work takes place every single day, with hardworking teachers supported by parents under strong principals. A few weeks ago, I visited Amundsen High School, led by the incomparable Anna Popovich, to celebrate the students receiving generous college scholarships from Dan Jorn and his wife, Pat, both alumni of Amundsen, he a former CEO of Walgreens. Amundsen High School, for those of you who don't know, is a neighborhood high school, one that's on the rise, attracting more and more and more local parents, and recently cracking Chicago Magazine's top 15 list. It is an ethnic stew, including the children of immigrants. And when I was there that day in the audience, the proud parents of all these new college-bound Americans burst with pride, holding up their cell phones to commemorate and memorialize the accomplishments of their children. And the students themselves spoke movingly. The Filipino immigrant who for years rarely saw his parents, one advancing his educational credentials in another state while his mother worked 60 hours a week to keep him in school and to keep the family supported. A Guatemalan child made his way here at 13 following the tragic death of his mother and didn't speak a word of English. But through the support of his teachers and fellow students, he became an honor roll student. And another scholarship winner barely escaped corruption and poverty in Africa before becoming to America and blossoming on the honor roll and as captain of the basketball team. In Africa, her family could not pay her school fees consistently, so she had to often drop out in the middle of the school year. With her college education at the University of Illinois, she has vowed to dedicate herself and her career to helping other impoverished children to ensure that they are not denied an education because of their lack of income. These are inspiring stories. These are what we think about when we think about the American ideal that armed with a quality education, you can overcome any adversity and achieve anything. It's a dream that should be available to all children, regardless of where they live, what their parents earn, or the color of their skin. It's a dream worth fighting for. And to do anything else would be surrendering to the most inconvenient truth of all, our indifference in the face of injustice. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those remarks. And now we're ready for some questions and hopefully some answers. So if you have any questions that haven't been picked up, just hold up your blue card and we will come by and pick it up. Okay, let's see what we have up here for us. Frank Clark, you want to handle one of his questions? Very first one, Frank. The governor claims CPS gets more funding than other districts because of the block grant dollars. Could you explain why this simply is not true?
Yes, thanks, Frank. I think it's important. That's an important point. The governor's claim is what they'll always say is that Chicago receives a special poverty block grant, and that is true. It's roughly $250 million or thereabouts. What he doesn't say is that we pay about $750 million in pension obligations that the state pays for every other school district. And that's why I say before, you can't do selective math. You have to put everything into the bucket and count it. Every single dollar of state education assistance to support schools in carrying out their mission including pension subsidies, including poverty grants, which we receive, including every single thing, general state aid, every categorical source of funding. And when you do that, that's when you see that despite having nearly 20% of the students, we receive 15% of the funding. And the difference is $500 million a year, which is a lot of money. It's the difference, as I said, between being in crisis and looking to cut and being looking to invest in our classrooms and provide fiscal stability for our parents. But it is, when, next time you hear that claim, just remember they're only focusing on one thing, and you have to look at the math in its totality.
Okay, thank you. This is from Eileen Makovich. Eileen, where are you?
It's back there.
Oh, back there. Okay, great. And we invite you to join the City Club, Eileen. $50, best investment you'll ever make. Her question, what can parents do to improve to improve the schools?
Just be involved. I mean, as we know that parental involvement is one of the key drivers of student success and the quality of our schools. In recent years, we've run parent universities to help train parents on how to do that better, how to support their kids, particularly with technology at home. And we encourage all parents to take advantage of that and to get involved. And the more involved a parent is, obviously, the better the student's going to do and the better the school is going to do.
Okay, thank you. This is from Dave Chisower. Dave, where are you? Okay, back there. Great. He's also not a member. If you and Eileen join up, we get to 2,500 members, so keep that up. Here's his question. Should CPS file for bankruptcy, assuming that option was legalized?
Filing for bankruptcy doesn't change anything. It doesn't change the fact that the district is being shortchanged by over $500 million a year by a racially discriminatory, illegal funding system. This is an issue of fair funding. It is not an issue of, the solvency of the district. The solvency of the district and the threat to the solvency of the district is driven by this system that we discussed today, this inconvenient truth. And that is what we have to fight. Going bankruptcy would be the worst of all worlds. It would set back all the academic gains that we've seen over decades, and particularly in recent years. It would destabilize the schools. It would drive parents away. It would be a disaster. And those who have pushed for that, like the governor, are not doing what's right or what's responsible for the school children of Chicago.
Okay, thank you. You like this question. So will Janice. She may get this assignment. It's from Stella Black. What is the penalty for crashing graduation if number one grandma does not have a ticket? You handle that.
Just tell us the school and we'll get you the ticket.
Did you hear that, Stella? Just tell them the school, you'll get a ticket. Okay, wonderful. Took a lot of pressure off me. Okay, great. If things don't happen in Springfield in the next 35 hours or so with regard to schools and school funding, what does this mean for the opening of schools in the late summer, fall?
We will open the schools in the fall, and we will do whatever is necessary to do that, and the mayor is committed to that as well, as he's made clear in recent weeks. But this is also something that we're not alone in. It's important to understand that there are school districts throughout the state who are suffering as well from the type of economic discrimination that we talked about earlier, as well as the withholding of block grants, which the state is doing. And there are hundreds of school districts throughout the state that are in deficit spending that are hanging by a thread and would probably not be able to open school in the fall but for a state education budget, but for timely payments. So this is a statewide issue in many ways. We are unique in the sense that we have a double whammy, but there are other districts that are also under siege by the policies of the state.
Okay. Would you like to handle a CTA question? This is, what makes Forrest run?
all of these different positions that he's had in that, and he served so brilliantly in each of them. But this is for Steve, from Steve Brenner. Steve, where are you? Way over there under the M. After all the terrific work on the South Side Red Line a few years ago, now for the question, the sandbag. Why is there still not a working escalator at a stop that serves a major university and a major league baseball team?
Wow. Whoa. Well, if I'd stayed, I would have taken care of all those things. But the first one was a...
Here we go.
I think working escalator. Yeah, I think you may want to come in a few weeks when Dorval Carter's here, and you can ask him about the elevator. But I'll tell him in the meantime so he's ready. So, right? Okay. Yeah, thank you. We'll get right on it. So.
Just be happy your team has won four out of the last five. Let's not get greedy back there, Mr. Brenner. Okay. Now, our drawing. So let's give Forrest a big round of applause.